Hello, my name is Bill Coghlan, and welcome to First Person Civil War Podcast, which retells the stories of the soldiers and officers on the ground in the battles of the Civil War. Episode 17 is entitled Private Leander Stillwell and the 61st Illinois at the Battle of Shiloh, and relies on the second edition of his book, The Story of a Common Soldier, of Army Life in the Civil War, 1861 to 1865, which he published in 1920. Leander Stillwell lived along Otter Creek in Jersey County, Illinois, when the war began, and enlisted in the 61st Illinois on 6 January 1862, at the age of 18, assigned to the regiment's Company D, and by his account, promoted to corporal a few weeks later. Just as a side note, official Army records have no mention of his promotion to corporal, but he did also state that the records of his enlistment were one day off. I will refer to Leander Stillwell as a corporal. On 25 March 1862, Corporal Stillwell and the 61st Illinois, numbering approximately 400 men, departed their barracks in St. Louis, Missouri, by boat down the Mississippi River, transferred to the Tennessee River by way of the Ohio, and arrived at Pittsburgh Landing on the evening of 31 March. Corporal Stillwell and the 61st Illinois were now in the 2nd Brigade, commanded by Colonel Madison Miller, of the 6th Division, commanded by Brigadier General Benjamin M. Prentiss, and Major General Ulysses S. Grant's Army of the Tennessee, and was part of a buildup of Union forces for a planned march upon Corinth, Mississippi. The regiment camped in a location approximately 2 miles south of Pittsburgh Landing, in vicinity of the eastern Corinth Road. Where Corporal Stillwell and the 2nd Brigade camped became the southernmost limit of the Army of the Tennessee, which meant that on 6 April 1862, the first day of the Battle of Shiloh, they would also be some of the first men to receive the Confederate surprise attack. We had turned out about sunup, answered to roll call, and had cooked and eaten our breakfast. We had then gone to work, preparing for the regular Sunday morning inspection, which would take place at 9 o'clock. It was a most beautiful morning. The sun was shining brightly through the trees, and there was not a cloud in the sky. But this morning was strangely still. Suddenly, away off on the right, in the direction of Shiloh Church, came a dull, heavy pum. Then another, and still another. Every man sprung to his feet, as if struck by an electric shock, and we looked inquiringly into one another's faces. There was no mistaking that sound. That was not a squad of pickets emptying their guns on being relieved from duty. It was the continuous roll of thousands of muskets, and told us that a battle was on. Corporal Leander Stillwell, in what he says was only a few seconds, heard the opening shots of the Battle of Shiloh. The regiment frantically began preparing for a fight, when a staff officer rode up to them. The officer cast one hurried glance around him and exclaimed, "My God, this regiment not in line yet? They have been fighting on the right over an hour." And wheeling his horse, he disappeared in the direction of the colonel's tent. One has to wonder what kind of effect this unknown officer had on the men who had never been in a fight. Colonel Jacob Fry, commander of the 61st Illinois, curtly addressed his troops as they formed. Corporal Stillwell believes it was to motivate the men to fight better than an Illinois regiment did during the Mexican-American War. "Gentlemen, remember your state and do your duty today like brave men." The regiment marched to the southern edge of their camp, and Corporal Stillwell continues, "And there we stood, in the edge of the woods, so still, waiting for the storm to break on us. The entire 6th Division managed to form before the Confederate attack broke upon them, and Corporal Stillwell and the men of the 61st Illinois waited in line of battle just south of their camp. The time we thus stood, waiting the attack, could not have exceeded 5 minutes. Suddenly, obliquely to our right, there was a long, wavy flash of bright light, then another, and another. It was the sunlight shining on gun barrels and bayonets. And there they were at last, a long brown line, with muskets at right shoulder shift, in excellent order. Right through the woods they came. Emerging from the woods was the 1st Brigade, 2nd Division, of Bragg's 2nd Corps, and consisted of the 21st, 22nd, 25th, and 26th, also known as Coltarts, Alabama, and the 1st Louisiana Infantry Regiments, as well as a battery of Alabamans. Colonel Zach C. Deese, commander of the 22nd Alabama, advanced with his brigade toward Corporal Stillwell's brigade. Marching in line of battle, at about 7 o'clock, we came upon the enemy, drawn up in front of their camp, where they opened fire on us with their infantry and a battery of artillery, to which we responded. Robertson's battery was brought into action, which soon silenced them, and shortly afterwards the enemy wavered and we charged, driving them through their camps, where we halted to reform. And after a short time, they again opened upon us with another battery. We then moved forward a few hundred yards and halted in support. By the end of this advance across the field, the brigade commander fell mortally wounded. His replacement was shot in the head, and command of the brigade then passed to Colonel Deese. Corporal Ledford, the 61st Illinois, and the rest of their brigade put up a spirited resistance. We began firing at once. From one end of the regiment to the other leapt a sheet of red flame. We had fired but 2 or 3 rounds when, for some reason, I never knew what, we were ordered to fall back across the field and did so. We halted on the other side of the field, in the edge of the woods, in front of our tents, and began firing again. We retreated from this position, as our officers afterwards said, because the troops on our right had given way, and we were flanked. As I rose from the comfortable log from behind which a bunch of us had been firing, I saw men in gray and brown clothes, with trailed muskets, running through the camp on our right. And I saw something else, too, that sent a chill through me. It was a kind of flag I had never seen before. It was a gaudy sort of thing, with red bars. It flashed over me in a second that that thing was a rebel flag. It was no more than 60 yards to the right. Given the position of the 61st Illinois, Corporal Ledford most likely saw the flag of the 25th or 26th Alabama. And just as a note, the 26th would reflag to the 50th Alabama later in the war. Corporal Ledford and his regiment retreated to a new line, held by Major General W.H.L. Wallace's 2nd Division. It soon became the focal point of the battle, and scene to several failed Confederate assaults, which thereafter became known as the Hornet's Nest. According to Brigadier General Prentiss, the 61st Illinois stayed well forward under every assault until the third line was formed, when the regiment became detached. Several Union batteries had formed in the Hornet's Nest and required infantry to protect them. Corporal Ledford and his regiment were given this task. It was at this point that my regiment was detached from Prentiss's division and served with it no more that day. We were sent some distance to the right to support Battery D, 1st Missouri Light Artillery. It occupied the summit of a slope and was actively engaged when we reached it. We were put in a position about 20 rods in the rear of the battery and ordered to lie flat on the ground. Artillery support was a common task during the Civil War. Though artillery did have close-range ordnance, such as canister, an artillery battery was not as maneuverable when engaging infantry or cavalry. The 61st Illinois, stationed behind Battery D, 1st Missouri Light Artillery, could be brought forward to push a Confederate advance back, ensure the battery was not flanked, or guard it when the pieces got limbered up for movement. From 10 a.m. to about 2 p.m., the 61st Illinois and Battery D, 1st Missouri Light Artillery, occupied this sloping position. And it was here that Corporal Stillwell saw Major General Grant inspect his portion of the line. He was on horseback, of course, accompanied by his staff, and was evidently making a personal examination of his lines. He went by us in a gallop, riding between us and the battery, at the head of his staff. The battery was then hotly engaged. Shot and shell were whizzing overhead and cutting off the limbs of branches. But Grant rode through the storm with perfect indifference, seemingly paying no more attention to the missiles than if they had been paper wads. Though artillery support was their main task, the 61st Illinois was called upon to reinforce infantry during Confederate assaults upon the Peach Orchard. We remained in support of this battery until about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We were then put in motion and crossed the left-hand Corinth Road. This line was desperately engaged and had been at this point, as we have afterwards learned, for fully 4 hours. Though we did not say which regiment they replaced, it was a regiment from Brigadier General Stephen A. Hurlbut's 4th Division, which occupied the ground around the Peach Orchard and Bloody Pond. Corporal Stillwell and the 61st Illinois stayed in line until they ran out of ammunition, whereby they were replaced by a new regiment. After replenishing ammunition, they returned to support Battery D, 1st Missouri. Somewhere between 4 and 5 o'clock, as near as I can tell, everything became ominously quiet. Our battery ceased firing. The gunners leaned against the pieces and talked and laughed. Suddenly, a staff officer rode up and said something in a low tone to the commander of the battery, then rode to our colonel and said something to him. The battery horses were at once brought up from a ravine in the rear, and the battery limbered up and moved off through the woods diagonally to the left and rear. We were put in motion by the flank and followed it. Though it was a lull in the fight, the situation at the Hornet's Nest and the Peach Orchard for the Union Army had become untenable. Colonel James M. Tuttle, commander of the Brigade of Infantry directly in front of the 61st Illinois and Battery D, 1st Missouri Artillery, received a similar order to withdraw. We held our position about 6 hours, when it became evident that our forces on each side of us had given way, meaning around the Peach Orchard and the divisions to the north, so as to give the enemy an opportunity of turning both of our flanks. At this critical juncture, General Wallace gave orders for my whole brigade to fall back, which was done in good order. Though the 61st Illinois and Battery D, 1st Missouri Artillery, managed to retire from the Hornet's Nest during this lull, as Colonel Tuttle's brigade began their retreat, the Confederates attacked yet again and captured half of his brigade. Corporal Ledford, already on the retreat, heard this latest assault. We emerged from the woods and entered a little old field, I then saw to our right and front lines of men in blue, moving in the same direction we were, and it was evident that we were falling back. All at once, on the right, the left, and from our recent front, came one tremendous roar, and the bullets fell like hail. The lines took the double quick towards the rear. The Union soldiers that remained in the hornet's nests, Wallace's 2nd and elements of Prentiss's 6th divisions, were captured. Had Corporal Ledford and the 61st Illinois not been detached to support artillery, they most likely would have suffered the same fate. The 61st Illinois marched up the Corinth-Pittsburgh Road and passed to the rear of General Hurlbut's 4th Division. There the regiment was reassigned as artillery support for what he called heavy guns. But Corporal Ledford never found out what unit they were from. Settling into his new position, he noticed something happening to the west along the Pittsburgh Landing Road. I slipped out of the ranks and walked out to the side of the road to see what troops they were. Their band was playing Dixie's Land, and playing it well. I saw that they had not been in the fight, for there was no powder smoke on their faces. "What regiment is this?" I asked of a young sergeant marching on the flank. "The 36th Indiana, the advance guard of Buell's army." Corporal Ledford said that he repressed a cheer, but he was elated at this news. Soldiers need not be told of the thrill of unspeakable exultation they all have felt at the sight of armed friends in danger's darkest hour. Speaking for myself alone, I can only say, in the most heartfelt sincerity, that in all of my obscure military career, never to me was the sight of reinforcing legions so precious and so welcome as on that day. The 61st Illinois did not participate in the second day of the Battle of Shiloh, as it remained in reserve around Pittsburgh Landing. In just one day of fighting, the regiment suffered 12 killed, 45 wounded, and 18 missing or captured, a total of 75 out of approximately 400 men, meaning 18% casualties. The 61st Illinois would go on to participate in the sieges of Corinth and Vicksburg, as well as campaign in Arkansas, though Leander Stillwell ended the war as a first lieutenant in Company D, he spent most of the war as an enlisted soldier, and he wanted the reader to know it. Leander Stillwell's second edition of his book served as the source for this episode, entitled The Story of a Common Soldier, of Army Life in the Civil War, 1861 to 1865. During the war, he wrote to his parents back in Illinois on a weekly basis, and just before his father died in 1897, returned them to his son. He also kept a small diary while on the march, which meant Leander Stillwell had a wealth of information that he penned during the war. He dedicated his book to his son Jeremiah, who asked him to write it, and being in his 70s, he was somewhat reluctant to do so. I will also say, for whatever you may think it worth, that you are the only person, now living, whose request could induce me to undertake the sketch that you desire. Thank you for listening to the 17th episode. The link to Corporal Leander Stillwell's book is now on the podcast website, firstpersoncivilwarpodcast.com. On Facebook, Instagram, X, and LinkedIn this week, you will find a picture of Leander Stillwell in 1863 and in 1909. If you are not following the podcast on these social media platforms, you should consider it. As a preview to the next episode, I posted a teaser quote on 14 April. Expect similar posts for future episodes. Private John Milton Hubbard of Company E, 7th Tennessee Cavalry, provides next week's first-person account at the Battle of Bryce's Crossroads. My name is Bill Coghlan, and thank you for listening to First Person Civil War Podcast.